Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Super friend of the show, guy we've known way back to when he was being educated at Kent State. His name is Nick Shook. He calls the NFL Network home. He calls NFL.com home. And right now, he is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. What's up, Nick? How are you?
Funny, I just bought a Kent State hat yesterday. Just arrived in the mail yesterday.
Nice.
Very nice.
Flash pride going. Doing well. Keeping up with all these owners' meetings, activities, and whether or not the tush push will get... Second discussion of the offseason.
So where are we now? So it sounds like it lives on.
It lives.
But could it die before the season starts?
No.
No?
I don't know.
No, this would be it. We're still kind of waiting, I think, for the meeting itself to conclude because they had a privileged session. But this would be it before the season starts. So that would essentially lock it in for the upcoming year. But it is funny that it had to be tabled. And then reach this point. Another thing that's interesting is playoff reseeding is not going to happen this year, but is going to be considered for 2026. That is going to be very intriguing. It could follow the model of the NBA.
All right, Nick, hang on. We're going to call you right back in 1 second. We did hear what you said, but it's just a little bit, what would you say? It's a little bit...
garbled.
It's digitized. So we're going to call you right back. We just want to make sure we can hear everything you're saying with clarity. So we'll call you right back. Again, so the tush push lives. And then the reseeding, Jeff, I thought, to be honest, I think it's a good idea to reseed. There's no way a team under 500 should get a home game the first week just because they've won their division.
Well, if you happen to be in the toughest division in the NFL?
I still don't, but you're not. You're not. If you're under 500 and you won, there's no way that you should just because you're, and I'm just saying the North because we're in the North, but let's just say the North has a down year and the team that wins is 8-9. I think it's a good idea to reseed. Just looking at it and just saying, well, if this team is under 500, why should they be able to have a home game? I agree with that. All right, so let's bring Nick back in. Hi, Nick. You back there?
Testing. 1, 2, 3. Hopefully you can hear me better now.
Way better. All right, so let's go back. Let's talk about this, the reseeding that you talked about for the playoffs. And how it's been tabled for now. They're going to leave things the way they are. Is that good, bad, and should it be changed?
I think that it kind of goes hand in hand with the schedule build. Because if you think about, like, we cross-sport compare it to the NBA. When they got rid of division winners getting the top three seeds, it they have more games to work with in the way that they build out who's playing who. Whereas much of the NFL schedule is based on rotation. By intra-conference divisions, one year the AFC North plays the NFC West, that sort of thing. So I think that before they implemented that, or at least took away the requirement for the top seeds to be division winners, I think they wanted to see how they could change the schedule to make it potentially a fairer landscape. Because the way that these schedules rotate, some teams simply get easier schedules than others because the whole division can be bad, like the NFC South has been in the past, or the AFC South. I don't know why it's always the South divisions, but it has been for a while. NFC West was really bad 1 year. So I think they get more time in the offseason to figure it out. It's better for them.
The onside kick gets a tweak. Apparently now you can do it anytime during the game. You must declare, and it's a 9-yard lineup now. Are they just messing with something, Nick, that either needs to be completely eliminated or I don't know what. Obviously the new kickoff formation changes things drastically. What are they doing and how are they going to finally resolve this thing?
Yeah, I don't understand why there hasn't been more traction for the alternative to the onside kick, which is the 4th and 16 play from your own 20.
Yeah, it's starting to sound like a good idea.
I like that
play. Yeah, it makes a lot more sense to me personally. Now, I don't know if they're trying to bridge the gap right now with this or not, but moving it from 10 to 9 yards. If you think about it, how many onside kicks have you seen that almost get to those 10 yards and then go out of bounds or get touched by the other team?
Right.
Maybe that's increasing the window of you know, potentially recovering it. But yeah, I agree. I think that alternatives should be explored as opposed to the onside kick. And it's kind of interesting that, you know, when the dynamic kickoff came about, that you couldn't do it until the fourth quarter, and now you can do it whenever you want. And it's almost like there was a little bit too many restrictions on these kicks. So, but yeah, ultimately, I think that the fourth and 16 idea should be the one that they go with in the long term.
The whole "I declare this is going to be an onside kick" thing just seems so silly.
I do declare.
It just seems bizarre.
Yeah, we never would have gotten the Sean Payton surprise onside kick in the second half of the Super Bowl when they beat the Colts.
Yeah.
You know, like, we wouldn't have gotten those moments, so I agree.
One of the other things, flag football being approved for the players and the owners approved, the players approved. So we will have flag football in Los Angeles with NFL players. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it was an owner's resolution to create an avenue to negotiate with the NFLPA, and seems like everybody's on board. So we're obviously 3 years out. We could still, there's a lot of time to hammer out the inner workings of how, you know, a player's contract might protect him in the event that he's able to participate in the Olympics. Again, another comparison to the NBA, because they've had pro players in the Olympics for decades now. It's important, I think, to the growth of football. That's why the NFL is backing it, because they know that flag football is an accessible avenue to the sport to get more people introduced to something that, you know, there's a pretty high barrier to entry when you need to source pads and helmets and all the other equipment. So it makes it easier to play, and it's easier to watch and understand, I think, from a base level for somebody who the sport might look very foreign to them, like, you know, potentially rugby or another sport might look to, you know, an American who's growing up with football in their backyard. So it's good. I think it's all good. And we'll see what types of players end up playing, who backs out, who decides to participate. But it's going to be another interesting event that I think is only going to help popularize football further.
I would not be surprised if the NFL gets behind, and because they are, and we're watching this every week. We can see it right here in Cleveland with what's going on with the girls' flag football, that they would want women's flag football in the Olympics too. Would be what, 28, would be 32? That you would think that they would be pushing for that hard, because the NFL has put a lot of money behind women's flag football. And, you know, if you don't see it, just open your eyes, especially the growth over the last 2 years. Like, I watched the way the Browns are supporting it here in Ohio, not just Northeast Ohio, all of Ohio. And they are just true champions for letting girls play and letting women play flag football to grow the game. Your thoughts on that?
No, you're absolutely right. I think the NFL has been pushing that for a while now, and you're finally starting to see a little bit of the, you know, substantial results from it, like to where it's clocking on a lot of other different people's radars that maybe it wouldn't before unless you were really plugged in. It's also a tip of the cap to the Browns as an organization. You know, yes, they have ups and downs on the football field, but they've done a pretty solid job in the community and in a number of different areas when it comes to advancing the game, whether it's, you know, reconstructing fields or pushing flag football or, you know, focusing on education with their Stay in the Game program. I mean, they've done a great job with that. And I think it's an example of how this sport, again, accessibility, it can be for everybody. It might not look exactly like you're used to seeing it with pads and helmets and everything else, but there are different avenues to play. And I think that getting more people involved will only be good for the growth of the game worldwide.
Nick Chook joining us from the NFL Network, local guy. Glad to have you with us again. Well, riddle me this one. As a local guy, you obviously pay attention to the Browns. You write great stuff about the Browns for NFL.com. What does it do for you when you take a look at the quarterback situation and you see Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, Dylan Gabriel, and Shedeur Sanders? Does it give you optimism, excitement over a quarterback battle, make you feel sick to your stomach? What's it make you, what's it do?
I wouldn't say sick to my stomach, because the alternative would make me sick to my stomach, which is that you don't have options. I hate to say this, because I think that, you know, some folks might see me as being a little biased or whatever since I'm from here, but I'd rather be in the Browns situation than the Steelers right now, you know, waiting on a 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers to decide whether he wants to play or not with Mason Rudolph as your next best option. At least the Browns have multiple avenues that they could go down. I look at it as a bit of a comparison to what Seattle did when they drafted Russell Wilson, but not exactly a one-to-one comparison, because they spent a lot of money on Matt Flynn to get him in there, and he was supposed to be their starter. But Matt Flynn had never really played a ton of regular season games before he got that money to get that job. Then they draft Russell Wilson. Russell beats him out in camp, takes the job. The rest is history. I could see the potential for something like that happening here, except that there is no Matt Flynn. There is Kenny Pickett, who has been, you know, bounced around now twice as a former first-round pick, and there's Joe Flacco, who's got another year or two left in the NFL, you know, if he wants it. So it's all the avenues are open, and I love it when, you know, there's no roadblocks in the way for anything to happen, because I think it creates intrigue and excitement. But will they win 10 games because of it? No. I mean, you can't tell now, and if I had to guess and put anything on the line in terms of my life or whatever, I would say no, they're not going to win double-digit games because of their quarterback situation. I could be wrong. At least there's a possibility for somebody to emerge from this battle, and that alone makes, you know, camp and especially the preseason. My God, the preseason is going to be must-watch TV in this town because of all these different quarterbacks and the reps that they're going to get.
All right, Nick, you get to answer the question that I've been asking everybody. I want you to give me the Browns' depth chart at quarterback today, as if they would play this afternoon.
Oh, man. You know, I thought it would be Flacco at the top, but I've been told that it's more Pickett at the top. So we're going to go Pickett, Flacco, Gabriel, Sanders, 1-4. And that could change vastly. But I think there's a reason that they went to the third round to draft Dylan Gabriel. And I think that at this point in the offseason, you haven't made enough strides in the competition to be able to differentiate that. So if it's Pickett's job, it's Pickett, Flacco, Gabriel, Sanders, and it could be in the complete reverse by the time we get to September.
What's that difference between Pickett and Flacco right now?
I think there's more upside. You know what Flacco is. You also probably feel pretty comfortable that you can go to Flacco if Pickett struggles. Whereas if Flacco struggles, then you go to Pickett and you know, the ceiling might be a little bit lower. I mean, there's more upside to starting Pickett because he's young. You know, he's only been in the league a few years. You can see, well, maybe he just needed the right system and to figure it out. And then he can really flourish. He is a former first round talent in what was a bad quarterback draft. And I think that intrigue enough is probably why he gets the nod over him. If you're going into a must-win game, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. But a week one to start a season, if you've seen enough from camp, I could see that being it. And knowing that you have Flacco to come in off the bench and still has a live arm and isn't very mobile to kind of, you know, keep the ship steady if Pickett weren't able to play or if he struggled.
You see one of these guys as the odd man out if they decide, you know, they can't keep four guys? In some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, when as soon as they drafted Shador, I thought, all right, we'll see you, Kenny Pickett, because it just seemed like he's the guy with the most trade value among that group. I mean, I could see a situation in which they actually like Pickett. They like Gabriel and Shador. They can't sneak one of them onto the practice squad for whatever reason, and they have to get rid of one of the, you know, veterans, and they get rid of Joe Flacco. But I think ultimately what you end up getting – In the most realistic sense, if they really want to keep Kenny Pickett, like if he wins the job, you go Pickett, Flacco, one of the two rookies, and the other one ends up on the practice squad, and you take your risks there for them, you know, potentially being stolen by another team.
When you look at the Browns roster going into this thing and look outside of the quarterback situation, just your thoughts on how they're going to be able to win. I'm just looking at that wide receiving core saying, can we get them a little bit more help? And, you know, the running back situation is going to be really interesting. But when it comes to the wide receiver spot, I don't see it. But Joe Flacco makes everybody look good. So, and I just say that from the time that he was here. Look at that Browns offense for me for a second and go, how are they going to be able to win games?
Yeah, it's the receiver. I thought they would add another player at the position, you know, beyond what they did this offseason. And yeah, Amari Cooper's still out there, but it sounds like he wasn't very happy when he got traded, and I understand why. But, I mean, if you're looking for employment, he's got a relationship with this organization and with Joe Flacco, and it would just make sense. So he struggled last year, and he disappeared in Buffalo. But, yeah, I agree. It's going to be a more methodical play-action-based offense. I think they're going to lean heavily on the run game. I think that's why they drafted two running backs and kind of tried to put a stop to what's been a revolving door of the position since Nick Chubb suffered that knee injury in week two of the 2023 season. So that's the low ceiling part of this team is the offense, at least the way I look at it now. But I think it's going to resemble more of a Stefanski offense of old and what he was known for in Minnesota than what we've seen him try to do with working with the abilities of Deshaun Watson or lack thereof over the last few years. And I think it's going to be a defense first team and Jim Schwartz's unit is going to be stocked enough to be an effective unit. I love what they did in the draft on that side of the ball, you know, drafting a linebacker, you know, in Schlesinger, who you know, as soon as they made the pick, I was like, that means JOK is not going to come back soon. Now we know that JOK is done for the season. So, you know, they could say that it wasn't related to it, but it was pretty obvious that it was. At least they have another option there with an athletic guy, and what they did up front as well with Mason Graham. That's going to be the strength of their team is their defense. They're going to have to hope that some of those receivers they've spent picks on or invested in outside of Jerry Jeudy are going to take the next step this year.
Nick Chubb joining us from NFL.com. You mentioned Nick Chubb. Is he on a roster at the beginning of the season, or does he go the Kareem Hunt route and is sitting there waiting when a team needs a running back?
I think that's the $64,000 question right there, because teams have kicked the tires on him or at least demonstrated some interest, and yet nothing has happened. And I can't imagine he would hold out for market value when it seems as though there's not much in the way of demonstrated market value. So the more this drags on, it is only May. There is still plenty of time for somebody like him to sign. It could be a camp signing. It could be somebody loses a guy and they bring him in, like closer to like what you said with Kareem Hunt. It's just crazy to think that 2 years ago, this guy was one of the best running backs in the league, and now he's being forced to kind of wait out the entire offseason for a job that's, you know, worth considering. But that's the way the NFL moves, man. They suddenly, before you know it, they're ready to push you out the door, even when you think you still got juice left in the tank. And on tape, we didn't see it from him last year, and then he got hurt again. So I understand why teams, you know, are cautious, but you never know. And I still don't rule out the potential reunion here. I know that the whole Jerome Ford taking a pay cut lessened the possibility that he would be here, but there's a reason you got 90-man rosters this time of year. So I still wouldn't be surprised if they found a way to work something out at one point.
All right, last question for you. Roger Goodell, he'll be the man at least through, what, March of 2027? He got a contract extension. Your assessment of the commissioner and what that means from as a just a boost of confidence from the owners?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a company man, the league continues to explode in growth and is more popular than ever. I know that because I live it every day. You know, the schedule release is now not just turned into an event, it's turned into a multi-day event with a breadcrumb strategy to drop a game on you on Monday morning on a morning show and another one on Tuesday and before the actual whole release comes out, and everybody eats it up. The numbers don't lie, and he's the guy overseeing all of that. I also give him some credit for, you know, piloting the league through some rougher times in terms of controversy, probably more last decade. And they seem to be on pretty steady footing right now in terms of popularity of the game and watchability. So makes sense. I'm surprised the extension wasn't for longer personally, but yeah, the train keeps on rolling.
Yes, it does.
Sure does.
Thank you, Nick. We appreciate it. Love having you on the show. And you know, we're reading you all the time, NFL.com and NFL Network stuff. Great job. We appreciate you.
Hey, you know, I love coming on with you guys. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We talked about a number of things with Nick Shook from the NFL Network, NFL.com. One of the things that we really haven't kind of dove into was Roger Goodell. And he picked up a 3-year contract extension that's going to keep him in the role through 2027. So they extended what he had. It's his, he's had a number of, actually, this is his 5th contract extension, I should say. And the current one was through 2027. So, you know, he's going to be here for a while, at least through 2027. So I'm just curious your thoughts, Jeff, on Roger Goodell, the job he's doing, and the contract extension.
I think Roger catches an awful lot of grief that I don't understand. How's that? I think he's done a great job. Why? I agree with Nick Shook. It's on fire, man. The NFL just keeps on going. I don't agree with everything. That's all right. Who does? Mm-mm. But I think he's done a really better than solid job. I think he's done a good job. And if I'm an NFL owner, I'm happy with him. And that's why I give him an extension. I understand it completely.
He has made things in the last few years relevant that we never, ever would have thought of being relevant. And when I say that is it's schedule release. It's making, adding an extra day to the draft. the way they release news makes the NFL relevant 12 months out of the year.
It's constantly relevant.
Look at the price of a team now, too.
Oh, it's
the Commanders are $6.5 billion.
Astronomical.
Think about the bargain the Haslam's got when they bought it, right? But it was $1 billion, I think, when they bought it. I mean, it's amazing to think of what the league is and where they are right now. And Roger was kind of groomed from this from the beginning. This was the dream for him, and he's living the dream. And he, I mean, the media rights alone for what they've done for the NFL, for what they've made into just gigantic wealth for these owners. And now the next step, and they're taking their time. I when we had the schedule guy on talking about Minnesota playing in Dublin and then playing in London 2 weeks in a row, and he was open and honest and said, yep, we are absolutely dipping our toe into the water about putting teams over in Europe for an extended period of time. Because let's face it, no one's ever done that before. Minnesota's going to Europe to play 2 weeks in a row. And you have to believe that, you know, United Kingdom, Germany, Brazil, they're all now a part of the schedule. And the NFL's doing it at the right time. Remember, we had a caller from Brook Park earlier today saying about, well, they're taking home games away. If you're not used to an 18-game schedule, which is what it looks like they're going to, can you really miss something you never had? That if every team is committed to having one offsite game a year before they went to a 17- or 18-game schedule, did you really miss it? That's my question.
That's valid. I'd say the answer is probably no, right?
No, because, I mean, you never had it to right. begin with. You can't lose something that you didn't have, I guess. But if you're a team that plays at 1 o'clock every week, you're probably not getting the international games. So now you have something that you could lose. You know, go ahead, sorry.
I interrupted you. Continue.
No, I was just going to say, you know, with the extension of the 17-game schedule, that some teams were getting 9 home games because of who they were. But if you're a major player and teams want to watch you play, odds are you weren't getting that 9th home game to start.
Am I wrong for thinking I don't want... How should I best phrase it? I don't want to see the NFL become too common. Do you know what I mean? They've played on so many days of the week now, and I guess oversaturation is what I'm looking for. I just don't want to see it become oversaturated. I don't want to see 20-some-odd games. You know, if you ever get to that point, stop it at 18. You're going to get to 18. We know that. Stop it there. I don't need to see NFL teams all over the globe. You know, take what you have and just milk it like crazy. I think the only thing that Goodell could end up not doing well is oversaturation of a great product. Is that legit?
No,
or
I do believe that is a legitimate concern. It's all in the way they handle it. Let's go back and think about one of the mistakes that maybe they made, right? Thursday night football.
What's
in
the
beginning, the beginning was the teams that they were putting there. And they were
the bad teams?
Yeah, they were putting teams that didn't deserve to be on national TV on Thursdays because everyone was guaranteed a nationally televised standalone game at night. Everyone was guaranteed at least one. How many years was that the game for the Browns, right? They had there's their Thursday night game. And when Prime came in and spent all that money, they're like, we're spending a lot of money here. Stop giving us garbage games. And they did.
Yeah.
It's still a short week, and the players may not like it. But that short week may turn into something else now that you may have more European play that you're looking at. You know, maybe you don't play one Sunday, you play Thursday, and you don't play the next Sunday if they give teams two byes.
Yeah, just don't oversaturate it. That's my only concern about the NFL. Rule changes and tweaking like crazy, that gets a little annoying. But I understand it. Most of it's in the name of public safety. You don't hear the NFL talking about shortening games. You know why? Because the ratings are through the roof.
No.
Why would you shorten that?
I heard a very interesting conversation that I don't know that it happens in the next decade or two, but the untapped market is well beyond Europe, that the untapped market might be China, that the untapped market might be India for professional football. And as I sat there and started to think about it, I'm like,
in what regard? Putting money, teams?
Finance, to be able to drive up the price of these teams, to play more games internationally, to...
See, this is what I'm talking about with oversaturation. You want the NFL to become live golf?
And this is where Dan comes in. Dan, is soccer oversaturated?
You could argue maybe. I mean, it's an argument with all the different cups and tournaments and all that kind of stuff going on.
It's interesting. Chris Rose is next with us here. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
He has been omnipresent for the past, I don't know, almost 20 years.
Don't forget BattleBots.
And BattleBots on television and here on the radio with us and on social media. And he is with us right now. So honored to have Chris Rose on with us. He is on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. And Chris, I want to dispel the rumors that you invented the tush push at a university school mixer with Hathaway Brown back in the early 90s. Is that true or false that you invented it?
Move on. Where are you trying? Are you trying to get anybody in trouble?
Sounded like you didn't, Chris.
I'm just saying. I mean, you're an innovator in this industry, my friend.
Yeah, no. Pass. I'll pass on that. Thank you, though. Pass.
And the NFL also passed on the tush push today, saying that they can still do it. What do you think of that?
I mean, yeah. As long as there's no proof that it harms players at an alarming rate, or any more so than any other play in football, why shouldn't it stay? I'm not a huge fan of it. Like, I don't love it. It's not, I don't get excited for the tush push. I'm surprised more teams aren't adept at it. But I mean, there's no reason to outlaw it. I think it was just because one team happened to be significantly better at it than others, and they have a quarterback that can squat 650 pounds and you don't.
Good point.
That sums it up perfectly, Chris. It really does.
Yeah, but I don't think it's. I don't think this one's really difficult.
They know how to block it, and they have the guy who can run it.
Chris, yep. How about the notion that you can now declare? You do declare that you can now have an onside kick anytime during the game, and now your guys only have to line up 9 yards away rather than 10.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, I'm happy that you can do it now at any point. Mm-hmm. I did always love, like, this. I have to admit, I always loved the surprise onside kick.
Yes,
we all do. Yes.
When the kicker would try and recover it and occasionally do it successfully, like, that's McAfee's favorite clip, I think, that he airs on his show, is him recovering one of those, I believe. And, I always enjoyed that aspect of it. So I always thought the teams that were surprising got some sort of edge during the week, that the front line of the return team left early and didn't mind their P's and Q's. And I thought that was a huge coaching advantage. So I don't know. I mean, I do understand, once again, the safety aspect of everything that is being done. I totally do, because who the hell wants to lose a player on a play like that? Nobody does. But I loved the surprise element of it. I'll miss that. And I'm just happy that we're doing it more so than the last 2 minutes.
I wonder if there's any other alternative other than the, you know, 4th and 15 type of situation that they could put in there, Chris. And I wonder if they maybe try that on some experimental basis in the preseason or some other time. Or do you think the way that this is going, do you think this is good, the 9 yards and any time during the game?
Well, I don't think you could do it on an experimental basis. Nobody's running onside kicks in preseason games either. They just don't do it. So I don't think you would ever get a real feel for how that would work anyway in a preseason. But I do agree with you. If there's some other method of getting it done, I'm all for looking at it. I always thought the 4th and 15 was kind of fascinating because of the percentages. Like, I think, wouldn't you feel like your team would have a better chance of making 4th and 15
yes.
than recovering an onside kick?
100%.
Yeah, it would be pretty punitive if you didn't, though. You could really get in, you know, obviously,
yeah, but
great
that's
field
the way it,
exactly.
That's
yeah.
the way it should be.
I might be more in favor of 1st and 20 or 1st and 25 because it's that much harder.
15 is not a lot of yards.
It doesn't seem impossible. Although I'm sure that they've done the math on it and said, well, 1st and 15 is maybe the hardest. I would hope that people who are a proponent of 1st and 15.
Yeah, I would imagine that they've done stuff like that.
Yeah.
Couldn't you see the second guessing, though?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Draw play. Wait, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There'd be a ton of that stuff.
That would be great. That would be a lot of fun. There's been some rumbling about Deshaun Watson and a recovery that puts him on the football field sooner than we would all expect. What do you think about that? And with the Browns, could you activate Deshaun Watson, have him on the team, and not have him start?
I personally don't think so. And once again, I don't have any information. I haven't talked to anybody that would know this because my focus is the preseason with what I do with the team, and he's not going to play in the preseason. Certainly at this rate.
No.
And it certainly doesn't feel like anytime soon. When Jimmy Haslam came out and said, we took a big swing and we missed, that sounded past tense to me.
Sure did, didn't it?
Yeah. And so I think everything that they are doing moving forward is to hope that one of the two lottery tickets that they got in the 3rd and 5th round can be a starter. And at the very least, give them an extremely competent backup moving forward. And that the trade to get out of 2 is all geared toward next year when the quarterback class is supposed to be a good one. So that's the way I see all of this. And what does that mean for Deshaun Watson? I personally can't see it in this uniform. I just can't. I can't because I don't. Here's why. Number one, I can't unsee what I saw the last couple of years on the field. And if the goal is to get this team back to the playoffs and eventually win a Super Bowl, I don't see that happening with that quarterback. That's the way I assess it. Maybe I'm off.
Or maybe you're right on the money. I think we all feel the same way. There's nothing that we've seen that would make you think that he's the right guy for this job. However, you remember him in Houston. I remember him in Houston. Andy, Dan, we chatted about this earlier. None of us think that that guy is ever going to show up here. Do you?
Well, I will ask you this. How many quarterbacks had an enormous donut hole in their career? What I mean was, came out of the gate great. You know, in 2017, he was awesome, blew out his knee. Then he came back, became 3-time Pro Bowler. The last time he was good was 2020. That is 5 full seasons ago. Even Kurt Warner, my friend and colleague at NFL Network, he disappeared for a little while, and then he got it back. So that's like a rare, rare exception. I don't know if there's many other quarterbacks that have done something like that. It just, it does not happen. Guys have bad years. My guys might even have a bad 2-year stretch. But to literally disappear for 5 years, I mean, good luck finding me that guy.
Chris, let me switch gears. I want to talk a little bit about baseball with you. We'll get to the Guardians in a second. You were one of the first people I thought of when Rob Manfred decided that, you know, like, hey, if you're not alive, you're eligible for the Hall of Fame. And I know it's the, you know, the summer topic on every radio station in the world about Pete Rose, but your thoughts on when the decision went down on that, and that, you know, it's your namesake there. So I figured you were probably one of the first people I thought of.
Yeah, I put a lot of stuff out there on social media about this.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the reinstatement. It was not a lifetime ban. That's not what it was. It was a permanent ban. And, you know, you can have a separate discussion as to why Rob Manfred may have changed his mind. And obviously that becomes somewhat of a political ball at this point that gets thrown in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to focus on the decision itself. It does not mean that Pete Rose is in the Hall of Fame. In fact, I would be surprised if he did get in. I stood firm on this, that I don't think he should get into the Hall of Fame for a few reasons. Number one is I think you are turning the back on the sport itself. And people, I do understand why some people's judgment is clouded because of half of the teams playing their regional games on FanDuel. Like, I get that. I do understand it. But there is a difference between doing business with gambling sites and not allowing your players and the people that work for the sport to gamble on it. I work in the NFL. We have segments that are sponsored by DraftKings and FanDuel and have a relationship, I believe, still with Caesars. But as an employee of the NFL, you know what I can't do? I can't gamble on sports, and so I don't. So there is a distinction that you know about. People can say it's hypocritical or whatever, but you know that. You know that. And by the way, Pete Rose didn't have to deal with that stuff back in the day. And people say, well, he only gambled on his team to win and stuff like that. Well, but he perpetuated a lie for 15 years after he was permanently banned. And when he finally came clean was when he could finally make a buck off of it. And that bothered me. And then since then, there have been other things off of the field, inappropriate relationship with somebody that was 16 that he admitted to. This isn't something that might have happened. It's something that he did. He was in his 30s and had a relationship with a 16-year-old. Now, once again, I know there are horrible people in the Hall of Fame. I don't know how you take them out. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the logistics are for that. And if people want to look into that, great. All I'm saying is you don't let another one in that doesn't deserve it, because people say, well, it's not the Hall of Heavenly Good, and why are you being holier than thou? I understand that, but there is a character clause. So do one of several things. Get rid of the character clause, which I would be perfectly fine with, and then it doesn't matter. You can let whomever you want in, and that stuff would still be disgusting in my book, but if you want to have a Hall of Fame with that, but if you're going to have a character clause, I personally don't want to hang around with the people who think that that part of your character is okay. That's where I sit on this whole thing.
All right, Chris, I just want to get your reaction, because you were one of the first people I thought of when the story came down, and we appreciate it, and we will talk to you soon next week. Let's do this again.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you later.
See you, buddy.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.